Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders, deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio. We are part of a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along with us in the chat and read the poems, make comments, and of course enter our contests to have your poems featured. I'm Afasiana, and with me I have Babbler. Babbler, how are you?
Good. Glad that the home moving, unpacking is starting to look kind of done.
Starting to feel like home.
It's getting there. It's still really empty. You know, we went from 668 square feet to 2,100 square feet, and it's really obvious. All of our furniture looks really silly in here.
still, that's a good problem to have. I had to downsize before, and trying to fit a house worth of stuff into a tiny apartment doesn't go so well either.
I was joking with my husband. I'm like, I remember when I moved across state in one trip in a Toyota Tercel. Not so much anymore.
No, I mean, it adds up as you get older, for sure. Like, when I first moved to the West Coast, I was four provinces away, and I came with a small suitcase and a backpack, and that's all I had. I had nothing. I had, like, no furniture, no money, like, absolutely nothing. I'm just like, so, I'm just going to sit on the floor here.
And sleep on
one
the floor
new thing a paycheck.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad you're starting to get settled in.
Yep, it's getting there. I hurt my knee, so I've got a limp going on, so that's fun. But hopefully eventually that'll go away. They're sending me to physical therapy for it, so it'll be fun.
Ah, yes, physio.
Anyway, how are you doing?
Not too bad. I'm pretty sunburnt from last weekend, which is my own fault, but I'm like, I've reached the peeling phase, so I look kind of like a snake. But
Dang it, Matthew.
Yeah, just sexy, losing my skin. I went to the Scottish Festival in Penticton, which is a few cities away, and it was cool, you know, all the dancing and the music and the caber tossing. I think it's caber, the big wood thing that they throw.
Yeah.
it was lots of fun, but I am burnt to a crisp. tomorrow I get to have firefighters at my library, and they're going to read stories with me to the kids. So I'm a little excited for that, see the firefighters in their gear.
Probably fun.
Yeah. Will you tell us about your contest that we're going to be hearing about tonight?
Yeah. So there are two contests. The first contest is titled Wives Tales, and this is exploring the idea of wives tales. You know, the weird little bits of advice and wisdom that seem ludicrous and are often only half true. That are kind of passed down, you know, they say by women, but everybody really kind of passes them down. These are, you know, those funky little stories like water boils faster when it's cold, or you can't swim after you eat. There's tons out there. And so I was kind of interested in hearing poetry about the old wives' tales. I've listed a few just to kind of stir up inspiration, but of course, welcome to use any wives' tale that inspires you. The first one that I offered up was You Can't Swim After Eating, which is, by the way, false. The second one is If You Shave Your Hair, It'll Grow Back Faster, Darker, or Coarser, which is also false. Number three was Never Wake a Sleepwalker, which is actually true. Number four was sitting too close to the TV will make you go blind, which is false. And the last one I offered up was feed a cold, starve a fever, which is partly true. But again, any wives' tale was welcome to make it into the mix. So that was the first contest.
I think that's really fun. I, unfortunately, did not have time to write this week. It feels like it's been a crazy week. You know, we're looking back on it. I'm not sure what I did. I unfortunately didn't write, but I see that we have some excellent writes here, so I'm excited to hear them. The first entry is by... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you're good. Go ahead. Did you want to do your carryover first, though?
Oh, maybe we should. Okay. Which, ironically, is also from Daniel DeShino. He was the first one on the list for yours, and he's the one who is a carryover from last week. Well, we actually didn't get it on time for the show, but it was for the contest that we kind of prematurely did last week. All right. So this was from my contest that featured quotes from Omar. Let me make sure I'm saying his last name right. I'm now questioning myself. Omar Khayyam. So the quote was, "When you love even the flaws of your beloved. And when you do not love, even his merits are irritating." So that was the prompt. And this is the poem called Real Love by Daniel Deshina. When the silence of the night claws my bane and my heart breathes a fluttering wind, love shines to settle the stormy seas and writes the words that keep me sane. And true love is not a storybook, is not of storybook tales, of knights once made and maiden knights, of treasure won from dragon's lair, of seas once crossed from love-swept sails. It is a cross to bear, as hers and mine, midnight cries through sunrise nights, a smile and eyes for only me, two hearts from tears to love divine, a love that soars past mythic dreams, two lovers frail, two lovers real. She is truth, all is what it seems, to know, to love, to feel. End poem.
Great read, Faziana. I really enjoyed this piece, you know, titled Real Love, touches on the falsehood of, like, storybook romance, you know. I always thought it was funny, so many storybook romances and Disney romances and things like that end with, like, and they lived happily ever after. And it's like, that's 90% of the story, you know. You only get, like, the meaning part of the story, you know. An actual relationship is that whole part that gets glossed over with, and they lived happily ever after. Well, how exactly? Can we get the info on that tidbit? Because relationships aren't perfect, you know. And I love that this touches on that, you know, that true love is not a storybook tales of knights once made and maiden knights, of treasure won from dragon's lair, of seas once crossed from love's up swales. It's not like always this big grand adventure. You know, a lot of it's really the mundane, you know. You know, how do you work day to day? Who does the chores when you're dead tired and you come in bed, you know, like when you're crabby or snappy, you know, like those are also parts of a relationship. You know, it is a cross to bear as hers and mine. Midnight cries through sunrise nights, a smile and eyes for only me, two hearts from tears to love divine. You know, it's rough sometimes, but the idea is that you're there for each other, that you're a team. You know, someone to smile at you and love you as you are and be loved as they are. You know, midnight cries through sunrise nights, I think is a nice way of saying, like, hard times. Part of me thinks, you know, raising kids, because midnight cries, you know, could be a baby. But it could also just be a really horrible day. You know, grief happens. You know, maybe somebody died, or maybe you got fired, or maybe you just aren't happy, you know. Those are all things that can lead to that, and it's part of a real love. It's part of a true relationship. And then the end, to me, feels a little more classical than the other parts, you know. A love that soars past mythic dreams, although I enjoyed that soars was spelled S-O-R-E-S, like a wound, because I kind of think that pokes again at the idea that it's not easy, you know, it's not flying, it's, like, wounded, you know, it's injurious, like, it's not necessarily something that just, you know, is wondrous all the time, you know, two lovers frail, two lovers real, she is truth, it all is waiting to know, to love, to feel. It almost feels like the way those last four lines are put, especially reminds me of like the French, oh gosh, the word is escaping me now, bohemian kind of theme. It's very romantic, but it's romantic in its realness. So I really enjoyed the piece, you know, really talking about what love is more about, like painting even the hardship as the romance, because that's what it is. I'm doing this right from Daniel. Your thoughts, Viviana?
I enjoyed it too. I like the expression "claws my bane" at the beginning, and then to think about how love settles that. But "claws my bane" in the silence of the night. I love that. That darkness clawing at you, and then you have the love that shines on it. So it's not so bad. I like that you pointed out the part about soar, where it could have been S-O-A-R and soar past the dreams, but instead it was sore as in pain. I think that's really clever how he did that. There's a simplicity to the last few lines that they're very short, two-word lines, and yet so powerful. And I like that "to love" was repeated, to know, to love, to feel. It's emphasizing that particular aspect and how it connects to the ones on either side. This is, very straightforward and very... I think authentic. Like it feels like pure and honest in that not everything is perfect. There are those midnight cries, and yet there's still that connection. So I thought it was beautiful.
Agreed. It did feel very, very real. I like how you used the word authentic. Just because, it isn't glossing over the hurt of it. It's kind of leaning into the hurt of it. And I'm glad that you pointed out the clawing part. It also made me think of the line at the top of the stanza where it says "a cross to bear," where "bear" is spelt B-A-R-E, not B-E-A-R. Like, it's not... it's to like reveal, to make vulnerable, which I thought was an interesting word choice as well, which I didn't notice until later. So, excellent, right? Thank you, Daniel. Wonderful comment, Viviana. Where are we off to now?
Why don't you read the entry from Victoria Frost for your contest?
This is "Lost Within the Pixels" by Victoria Frost. I've sat within the silent vigil, feeling the static tickle the tip of my nose, trying to see the bigger picture beyond the pixelated rainbow dots that flood the fuzzy horizon. I still see fine. The way I watch those squares move, shift within their chromatic dance. My fingertips trace over the metal mesh-covered speakers as though the image will come with osmosis, willing those tiny vibrations to reveal to me the greater meaning. I'm still lost. Hoarding the screen, my silhouette casts the true reflection of my soul, basking in the blue glow of an empty living room. Trying to find the hidden meaning in these old VHSs that captured moments of my childhood, joyous, vibrant, and utterly empty. I'm alone. Still, seeking that connection to the people unwillingly bound to me by blood, left in the old drawer of 90s cinematic delights. Perhaps there is a treasure in here, an old Disney black diamond, not just the family black sheep. Abandoned. The glimmer is gone. Technology has moved on and left me here. Old memories of times when connection meant more than a text asking for money. Now I sit here collecting dust, a relic of memories, cherished and useless, left staring at a screen. trying to find the meaning, the moment when life changed, when I was forgotten, deemed worthless. All the while you sit there, distracted by invisible pixels, claiming I am the one who will go blind. End poem. I really liked the take on this write. I think it took the old wives' tale of sitting too close to the TV making you blind and put a really interesting spin on it. You know, it's reviewing bits of nostalgia, trying to find or recapture those feelings from youth, you know, from childhood videos, from VHS tapes, from Disney movies, from that excitement that existed when you watched and viewed those things, but when viewed later, almost feel bittersweet, especially if the relationships and the memories that they were tied to are no longer as happy as they once were because of a current scenario, you know. And I think it's really well articulated here. You know, in that first stanza, you know, feeling the static tickle the tip of my nose, trying to see the bigger picture beyond the pixelated rainbow dots that flood the fuzzy vision. You know, I grew up mostly without power. Occasionally we'd have a power turned on, and that was exciting. And we would usually watch VHS tapes or play video games, but we lived fairly close to Canada. And so we would put up antennas and try to get, like, the Canadian PBS and public broadcasting stations. And we could get some of them, but some of them we could only kind of get, and they'd be, like, these fuzzy, wavy images with, like, bars of static. And that's what makes me think, what it makes me think of, is trying to, like, picture the rest of the picture when you don't have it all because it's fuzzy. You know, but then punctuated with, I still see fine. You know, it didn't make me blind. I sat there with my nose so close that I could feel the static from the TV. But my eyesight is just fine. You know, and then to move on from that, to talk about how you're still not seeing the picture the way you used to see the picture, you know, as though the image will come through osmosis. Like, if you just touch it, if you just merge with it, somehow you'll find it, and the bigger meaning in the static. But of course, it doesn't come. And then that next stanza, where it's more nostalgia. You know, you start to get into the bigger picture of the piece because you're kind of zooming out on what they're trying to make sense of, you know. And now it's the nostalgic bits, you know, it's the VHSs, it's the childhood home video, it's, you know, the recollection, and yet it's empty because they are alone now. Like, the people who were there with them in these childhood videos, maybe filming it, et cetera, or watching these VHSs with them are no longer present. And then it kind of leads into it again by saying, you know, still seeking the connection. People unwillingly bound to me by blood, so related to you, and they don't even want to be, you know. And you grew up with these people, and they're the people that make up your entire childhood, your entire life, up to a certain point, and now they're just not even around. And it really kind of discolors and warps the memories of those times, because what seemed like a happy time is now painted in a new light. You know, and to look back and try to find the good in it, you know, the Disney diamond, instead of just the family black sheep, you know, just be reminded that you're not accepted, which is punctuated by the word abandoned, you know. And then to go into the next one that talks about how, you know, the fondness and the warmness and the warmth of all of this is really shadowed over by the fact that those relationships don't exist anymore like they used to, and now people just text asking for money, you know, and you feel like you're worth nothing. And then I really liked how it goes back into the old wives' tale at the very end, you know, all the while you sit there distracted by invisible pixels, claiming I'm the one who will go blind. because they are the ones who are blind, because they didn't see the love and they didn't see the purpose in, like, maintaining a relationship or treating someone like they were valuable. So I really liked it. I felt like it was really well done. I think the structure works really well in getting that emotion across, you know, making the reader really feel what he's articulating, you know, that I still feel fine. I'm still lost. I'm alone, abandoned, left staring at a screen. You know, it's a summary of, like, the seams of the piece. But when you interweave them with the stanzas between, it paints a sad and bittersweet story. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well done, and I think it's beautifully on theme. Your thoughts, Viviana?
This one hit hard. It's so much, like, depth of feeling in here, and it does really expand on the wives' tale to show, like, a much bigger picture, which is kind of fitting in that it's, you know, the bigger picture of the TV, and then the small pixels that make up it make it up. So it's like the little bits of the relationship scene in these VHS movies, those, they become like the pixels, and then if you look too close, then instead of being blinded, you actually are seeing the truth. It feels like an extended metaphor woven into this. Saying it's a silent vigil is really an interesting way of starting it out. And that static tickle on the nose, I know exactly that little zap feeling. not so much with modern TVs like that we have now, but I certainly remember this little black and white one in my grandmother's attic that would do that. If you got too close, it would zap you. Probably wasn't the safest thing. That's why in the old days they said it would make you blind, because they would, you know, shock you in your face. This is just it's really striking in the way that it talks about that family connection and the lack of family connection, and repeatedly it's talking about seeking a connection that's not really there. The blue glow of an empty living room, it's emphasizing that no one's really there. But I like hoarding the screen as a way of talking about, like, being too close to it, because it makes me think of, like, when there's a bunch of kids trying to watch and one kid's standing right in front of it and it's like, we can't see, move, you're too close, and, like, that fight over it, and then hoarding the screen doesn't matter anymore when you're the only one there, and it just becomes part of recognizing that there's no one else there to object. My silhouette casts the true reflection of my soul. That's powerful right there. And the VHS capturing moments of childhood, you know, those little home movies can be so funny or emotional or devastating, depending on what it is. But even the happy moments in a situation like this can feel bad. So I like that she goes joyous, vibrant, and utterly empty, because even if you see yourself kind of like frolicking and having fun, to recognize the context of it changes it. And sometimes on those home videos, you can, like, even if you see the kid happily playing, you can hear the background noise of, like, what else is happening. So, you know, if the parents are, or whoever is having, like, a conversation while they're filming, that's kind of like an argument, or, like, you know, making fun of whatever the kid is doing, or, like, I don't know. But there's a possibility of that moment being tainted, that moment that would have been joyous and vibrant, realizing that they actually weren't capturing it and paying attention to it in the way that it felt like maybe they would have or should have. I agree with you, Babbler, about how the structure really helps with the one line in between the stanzas, those short summations of what's going on. And I liked the contrast of the Disney Black Diamond and the family Black Sheep. I also like it described as the 90s cinematic delights. Something about VHS and like being like a key moment of the 90s. I've definitely found it interesting at work. We have a digitization station where you can turn your VHS movies into digital files to preserve them, because it's really hard to get a VCR these days. It's curious, like, what gets converted and who wants to preserve things. It's not always who you expect. You think it's going to be an older audience, but sometimes it's like the next generation. But it's just, there's that special thing where it's like, it should be delights, but then it's instead making her realize that she's not fitting into that family. And if the only having a text asking for money instead of having that real connection, I think it's important when she says that she's sitting there collecting dust. It's not the old VHS movies that are, it's her current state, her current self that's being neglected in this way, that's been shelved. It's just a devastating poem, really. But beautifully executed. And I miss Victoria. I used to get to talk to her on here all the time, and I haven't in a while, and this is making me remember I have to send her a message.
Same. I used to hear from her frequently. I feel like I haven't heard from her in a while. I hope she's doing all right. Wonderful comments, though. You know, as you were describing, like, the home videos, you know, and the way that people could be arguing or bickering on there. You know, I have a few home videos. One always cracks me up because I'm a little kid. I'm like, I don't know, two maybe. And my Uncle Lenny comes out and with a bunny tail and puts it out the zipper hole of his jeans. And is making, like, sexual jokes. And I'm on the camera and... The look on my, I look at my mom like, what's wrong with him? Like, and it made me think of that, like, how you don't always understand everything when you're a kid. And then when you look back at them in retrospect, you know, the interpretation of things that are going on changes. Or maybe, you know, you question what the hell happened. You know, why is it different now? But excellent comments and wonderful piece, Victoria. Very emotionally effective. I think it was wonderfully written. What are we up to now, Daisiana?
There's one by Nan529, and I'll read that one. Old Wives' Tales by Nan529. Without a doubt, my mom was a wise person. Never cast a doubt till May runs out, said Mom. You can wonder all you like, but let me tell you, why the month of May, and what do you have to doubt? Living in the UK, we're famous for our weather. Umbrella companies make a fortune out of us. It's the only country where you go out with sunglasses, suntan cream, rain, Mac, or a coat. Trust me, May can fool you 1 minute. Hot, sunny day, in the blink of an eye, you're shivering and it's raining. Gardeners swear by the end of May we may be free of frost. While Mom would nod expertly, it's the pneumonia month, so be careful. You know what they say, never cast a doubt till May runs out. End poem.
Wonderful read, Avisiana. This one's a little more lighthearted, but I really enjoy it. Without a doubt, my mom was a wise person. you know, and then to explain the wives' tale, which I've never heard this one, you know, never cast a doubt till May runs out. But as they say, it may be a local colloquialism, you know, something that is kind of indigenous to the area, you know. So why the month of May, and what do you have to doubt, you know, and to describe it as, well, basically the weather is just going to do whatever the heck it wants to through the end of May. I love even at the beginning of the last stanza, it says, gardeners swear, by the end of May, we may be free of frost. It's still not even certain. There's still no certainty. I do think it's funny that it says never cast a doubt, and yet it's all doubt. It's like it's certainly going to be anything. which I really like. You know, it's the only country where you go out with sunglasses, suntan cream, rain mac, or a coat. Which, living on the Oregon coast, that was very similar. I'll never forget the first week that I lived there. I moved there in June, and I went out in a t-shirt and some jeans because the weather was pretty nice. And I went out to the beach, and then it just started dumping buckets. And then I had to walk home, and I was like a soaked rat. And I learned pretty quickly that the weather there changes very, very fast. And you have no idea what it's going to do or what it's going to be. That coastal wind is no joke. So I really enjoyed the piece. It was a little more lighthearted, a little more friendly, you know. I did find it interesting, you know, it's the pneumonia month. So be careful. I think that's like another colloquialism. I'm not really sure what that means, you know, other than like the month that people get pneumonia. Like, that's kind of freaky. So I really enjoyed it. You know, I think it was a little peep into some UK culture that I'm less familiar with, and some advice from mom that's lighthearted, but, you know, a bit sensible if you live somewhere where the weather is going to do whatever the heck it feels like, which is what it sounds like. So I enjoyed the write. Thank you, Nan. And your thoughts, Faziana?
I thought it was sweet. I've never heard the expression, never cast a doubt till May runs out. And it kind of makes me wonder if it's like, don't doubt that summer will come until the end of May. It's like, it may seem like it's never going to, but it will. but there is that kind of doubt of what the day will bring. And I mean, I don't think that's specific to the UK because we're kind of famous for it in Canada of, you know, you have summer in the morning and winter in the evening sometimes. When I lived in Waterloo, our house kind of covered half the yard with shade and the other half was sun. So if I can't remember what month it was, but we were laying in the yard and the half in the sun was we were sun tanning and like in like bikini tops, and then our bottoms were in the shaded part, which still had snow, so we had like winter boots on, and it was like the weird combination of like it depends on if the sun's touching you. So that's just what I picture when talking about this. Because you had to dress for what half of the yard you were going to be on. I've never been to the UK, but this is fun. It kind of makes me want to go in May and discover, like, what is it that you're not casting a doubt about exactly.
I like your interpretation of don't cast a doubt that summer will come. That sounds right. That sounds like the other half of the phrase that you don't get when it gets lobbed off because it's just become such a piece of, like, local wisdom. You know, it's common knowledge in the area what the other half of the quote is, you know. So I really enjoyed it. And I think you're right. That's probably what it is. You know, good weather is going to be here, and don't think anything of it until May is over. If it's June and we still don't have it, okay, we can start to be concerned. So I like it. Wonderful observation. Excellent comments, Faziana. And thanks again, Nan. So where are we off to next?
Well, I like that in the chat, Luke points out that umbrellas can be multi-purpose, and it's true. They can block the rain. They can be a sunshade. They can stop snow. They can do all kinds of things. Umbrella for all occasions. Speaking of Luke, let's do his poem next. Will you read that for us, Babbler?
Absolutely. This is Television Rewind by J.R. Television. Rewind vision. Do you ever feel inverted by the thoughts in your mind that are reverted? Commercial. We interrupt your glued vision on the small box in front of you, coming to you live with news that could only find you. It's time to start this short intermission. Time for an interview. Broken pixels. Channel zero. Static awaits you. The interview that has been interrupted. There's a gray wall behind you. Interrupted. Closed circuits. Clock face turn of the century. We grant you entry to the rebirth of the center B. That static is like buzzing in your ears. Screen still fuzzing. Rest your soulless eyes. Watch the entertainment become flies, drifting off into dreamland, a projection of where you stand. We promise you that this was never planned. Commercial. We interrupt your program to bring you back to us. We noticed you went off air. That's not very fair on those who care. It's time to start this short intermission. Time for your mission. Channel 0101. Static awaits you, my dearest friend. Your eyes may bend into a slave that worships a square that's secretly a cube. Not that you would notice the shape. You're officially glued. Closed circuits. Broken clock face turn of the century. The final hand strikes 12. The other is damaged. There's hope for you yet, as we believe you can be salvaged. We interrupt. We interrupt. We interrupt. Filter. Static. Help us. Please. To the news. Blinded by an obnoxious, flickering square. End poem. Like this. It was very interesting. It was a very different feeling. It almost felt like a bit of a script, the way it's broken up with commercial and channel zero. It's kind of telling you where to go, like setting the scene for what's happening. You know, and you're getting like this TV box that you're like glued to that people, everybody's watching, everybody's staring at a screen, you know, which is funny to think about because like literally right now I'm talking to my phone, which is lit up. And I'm looking at one monitor that has the poem on it. And then I've got the other monitor that has the board on it. You know, like, talk about, like, looking at screens. Like, screens, screens, screens. So this is very accurate, you know. In coming to you live with news that could only find you, you know, like, I like that because it's kind of about your memory, you know. Because they're talking about even your mind is the box. You know, it starts with that. Do you ever feel inverted by the thoughts in your mind that are reverted? So it's almost like internally in your head is its own separate screen. So, of course, this news can only find you because it's your thoughts. But on top of that, almost every screen you have is connected to the internet or some kind of algorithm that tailors what you see so that it is coming to you. You know, you find that if you go on to, say, like the Facebook of somebody who's really left-leaning, you're going to see a lot of posts that are in support of things that are left-leaning, you know, from advertisements to news articles to even the friends that they see more frequently, versus someone who's politically very right-leaning, it's going to be the opposite. And then you end up with these people who are in these boxes, and they don't even know that they're in the boxes because everything is kind of being spoon-fed to them. You know, and then it says, time to start the short intermission. And then it comes into, like, this, you know, new static where you can't even finish your thought. You don't even get to finish the previous thought before you get interrupted. Everything gets interrupted. Every line is interrupted. And it just keeps happening. And it reminds me of racing thoughts, but also the fact that everything gets interrupted anymore. You know, when I was a kid, you'd sit and you'd watch like a 2-hour-long movie and no problem. Now I feel like I can barely watch, you know, everything's like on YouTube or digitized or whatever, and there's like ads every few minutes. You hardly do get to finish a thought. You hardly get to finish this, like, I don't know if I can go 15 minutes without being exposed to some kind of advertisement most of the time. So I really like that, you know, because it really is just kind of like interrupted. But it also reminds me of my brain when my mind's racing or I'm having anxiety issues, because that's exactly how it goes. I'll start to think about something, and I'll start to think about something else, and I'll start to think about something else, and none of those thoughts get finished. You know, we promise you this was never planned, which feels very, and with this whole poem, really, it feels very 1984, very Orwellian, you know. And then when you get to that line, you know, we promise you that this was never planned, it feels like bullshit. You know, it feels like a lie. Like, we promise you that this was never planned. And it's like, when someone promises you something, especially that you never asked for, it feels very forced. Which is funny, because it's one of those things when I promise that kind of stuff, like, oh, I promise I didn't do this on purpose, or, you know, I always think, well, did I just hurt my own case by saying that? Because I wonder what I would think on the other end. But, you know, when I read that, it feels very Orwellian, you know, the 2 + 2 = 3 kind of thing. And then even that gets interrupted, you know, bringing you back again. And it's almost like you took a break from the internet, or you took a moment to think for yourself, and you're being scolded by it, by the media. And then again to another one, you know, and then I liked the line, into a slave that worships a square that's secretly a cube. You know, there's the what's presented to you, and then there's all the things that are actually going on, all the mechanisms behind what's shown to you. And it happens in so many ways, you know, information for one thing, but, you know, agendas for another thing. You know, there's the bigger, more politicized things, the more forcing you into certain things message that I think fits the very Orwellian vibe of this piece. But then there's also just other things, you know, like even when you're using an app, right, all you see is the user interface. But then there's the whole mechanism behind building it. You know, there's all of the code and dev work that went into it to make it into something that functions, where you feel like all you're doing is clicking a button, and it's all these strings of code that make it work, you know, and I feel like that's part of that secret cube that you don't even notice the shape because you're secretly glued. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was very Clockwork Orange, Orwellian feeling. And I could hear, like, the facade voices in my head, like, the very trained tone to it. And then, you know, at the very end where it's like, help us, please. And then back to the news. Like, you know, even the cries for help, they're silenced by static, get silenced again by brainwashing. So I really enjoyed this piece. I think it did really well on taking the idea of being blinded by the television and twisting it into a whole new, you know, way that the TV will blind you to reality or your own thoughts. Excellent, right? I really enjoyed it. Your thoughts, Faziana?
I agree. I like that it went with, like, metaphorically blind instead of literally having your eyes blinded. I like the... we interrupt your glued vision on this small box in front of you, like that you are kind of like glued to your screen. And that when it says it would only find you, I think you're right about how it talks about like the way that algorithms work, and that, like, you know, if you have gone to certain websites, if you've read certain articles, if you're friends with certain people, then you get a specified news with the slant that you lean towards generally. You get the news that you're looking for. People have confirmation bias where they phrase their searches in a way that what they're searching makes them find the kind of news that they want. And eventually that's the ads that you get. So you are put into that box where you don't see outside of your narrow point of view, and not necessarily on purpose, but you've kind of like locked yourself in there. And the news that could only find you, it's not that it would be something for everyone. You know, we have to make an effort to see news outside of our niche. I mean, there are ways, but I thought that was really insightful. it also made me think of something about the way that was worded. There's this game I'm playing, Borderlands, Tiny Tina's Wonderland, and if you don't touch it for too long, then the character gets mad at you for, like, not playing, and she'll go, you know, it kind of feels like someone looked away from a big screen to look at a little screen, and the little screen's not as exciting as this big screen, and, like, she just kind of, like, complains that you're probably looking at your phone, and the thing is, I usually am. I'm usually guilty of that. I looked away from the big screen to look at the little screen, and then it's like, oh. So, I don't know, this is more serious than that, but for some reason, it just, I always feel really called out when she says that. As much as it's a joke, I'm like, wow, I am looking at a screen as distracting me from the other screen. And I feel like I need her to yell at me when I read this poem. the channel zero also got to me because I think, now I'm so old now I don't even know, but I'm pretty sure when I was a kid you had to go to Channel Zero to be able to get, like, your Nintendo or whatever. You have to switch it, like, to a certain channel to be able to go off of, like, the cable TV or the not cable TV, whatever the TV was, and put it to, like, your... I can't even think of what that's called now because it's, like, it's not HDMI like we have now. It's, like, the different little colors that go in. the cords
cable.
There.
The red,
yes,
black, and white, and maybe yellow.
Yes, exactly, those ones. And the static happens in between when you're switching things over. And it's been interrupted. And then it talks about how... the interruption, because it was interrupted, you got to start over again. Where is it? There's something about, like, it's mad at you for leaving. I've lost that part. But there was a part where it was like, since you weren't paying attention, we're back to the news. And it's like punishing you for, like, if you went away during the commercial. No, you have to watch that commercial. And that makes me think about how, like, in a bunch of free games that I play, like little apps, sometimes, because if you're playing free, you have to watch a certain amount of videos to, like, get the points. Like, even, like, in a Scrabble game, it's like, if you want to get to play another game, you have to watch this video. And if you aren't, like, actively watching it, if you, like, scroll away from that screen or if you let it, like, fall asleep, then it's like, no, we're starting this video over again because we know you didn't watch the whole thing. And something about it when it was talking about, like, you weren't paying attention made me think about that. It's like, well, we're starting over, and you're going to have to watch this. And I like that it says broken pixels in brackets. Like, the fact that it's, like, the broken ones is really important. Blinded by an obnoxious flickering square. This is really well done. It's, like, meta, where it's aware of itself, and it makes you think about the form. And it makes me think about, what's it called? Marshall McLuhan wrote this book, or article or something, the medium is the message. And it was about how whatever you're using to share a message changes the way that it's absorbed, whether it's TV or, like, newspaper or whatever. The medium influences the message. And this kind of makes me think that it's calling out what kind of messages you could get from the medium of television.
Yeah, I like what you had to say. Like, I'm interested in that whole the media is the message. You know, because I do feel like I absorb things very differently on a screen versus reading it or on paper or hearing it. You know, it's very different. My husband gets frustrated sometimes because I don't watch TV, and I never really have. Again, I didn't have power most of the time I was growing up. So, like, TV wasn't really a thing. I don't sit down and watch a lot of shows. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't, it's just not a habit that I have. And as a result, I think I'm one of the more well-read people that I know, because I'm much more inclined to do that. Even audiobooks. I'll do a lot of audiobooks as well. And I do feel like the information is different because I can focus for a really long time on reading and not be interrupted. And it's so true on a screen. And I know those games that you're talking about, too, because I get frustrated. I'll start playing them, and it'll be like, oh, here's an ad. Oh, here's an ad. And I'm just like, I'm done. I'm not playing this anymore. Like, no. I just don't tolerate it very much. I get frustrated. Like, I have my own racing thoughts to combat. I don't need to be interrupted on a screen every few seconds. So, excellent comment and really great poem. Right up in my alley. I very enjoy this genre of writing, that kind of grittier style write. So, wonderfully done. Thank you, Luke. What are we up to now, Ephesiana?
Now I'm going to read the one by Daniel DeShino. It was the first one on your list, but I ended up skipping it earlier because we had just read his carryover. So, back to Daniel. Joseph Campbell Blues by Daniel DeShino. Faith, folly, happenstance, and circumstance, seduced by rants, scared of chance. Roll my bones, and am I broke? Spit my words before I choke. Mystic arts and old tales enchanced, magic will shackle when fear entranced. So into the murky waters I dive, starving from the fear and the myth to survive, unprotected as a newborn's new gentle skin, waiting for the werewolf to emerge from within. I shiver from the waters, weakened and diseased, fighting between control and my cravings appeased. Only a mortal in all reality, I crumble and prostrate from exhaustion's brutality. And at the cost of spirit so broken, so lost, I wake cold and lifeless as an emotionless frost. No heat from life as the cold fuels my blood, I fall to unknown, a paranoid flood. And with soft glowing light, I rot in its wake and go blind from the lives that others might make. Tradition, suspicion, submission, attrition, superstition. End poem.
Great read, Ephesiana. And I really liked this. I'm not super familiar with Joseph Campbell. I'm aware that he is a writer. He's an author. So for me, this poem is about kind of like the death of reading almost, which is, ties in nicely to what I was just talking about a minute ago, interestingly. You know, the way that things have changed. You know, I go to mystic arts and old tales enhanced, magic will shackle when fear entranced. Into the murky waters I dive, starving from fear and the myth to survive. Unprotected as newborn's new gentle skin, waiting for the werewolf to emerge from within. Isn't it thingy like the genre of writing, you know, the idea of the mystery and the drama and, like, werewolves and, you know, that kind of fantastical style of writing, you know. And then when I read waiting to emerge from within, it's almost like waiting to be read, like waiting to be enjoyed, like the entire world to be explored, you know. And then I shiver from the waters, weakened and diseased, fighting between control and my cravings appeased. Only immortal in reality, I crumble and prostrate from exhaustion's brutality. At the cost of spirit so broken, so lost, I awake cold and lifeless as an emotionless frost. It's kind of like this failing, you know, thinking, oh, all these wonderful things await, and yet it's weakened and diseased. It doesn't have the effect that it used to have. Like, it's not as powerful as it once was. You know, just no heat from life as the cold fuels my blood. It also kind of doubles well, I think, as a section, you know, also, which, you know, would tie into that title, you know, the blues, the Joseph Campbell blues. you know, it's kind of, I don't know, comical, at least in my mind, to picture like a depressed werewolf. You know, why wouldn't they be depressed? That's a kind of sorry state of life. And you don't really think about that. you know, like depressed supernatural beings. But why not? You know, and then with the soft glowing light, I rot in its wake and go blind from the lives that others might make. So this is kind of, again, that duality. Like, it could be, like, the actual werewolf or vampire or mythical being of your choice rotting away in front of the television, you know, and just kind of ceasing to exist. But it could also be, again, that metaphor for, like, nobody's really experiencing the novel anymore. Everyone's just kind of rotting in front of the TV. And all of those fantastical stories that were written are just kind of being lost. Tradition, suspicion, submission, attrition, superstition. You know, like, tradition, you do things because that's the way it's always been done. But then to look at it suspiciously because, well, why do we do it that way? Submission being like, okay, it's wrong, and then feeling bad about it, and then just calling it superstition. I really enjoyed because it's like a breakdown of mythology, which works again well with the rest of the piece because you tie back and it's talking about mythology and kind of the falling apart of what made myths interesting. You know, to now just boil down what people used to believe and call it superstition. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was really interesting and really multi-layered. So well done, Daniel. Your thoughts, Casey, on that?
I like the way he managed to weave several of the prompts together. Like when I read, "So into the murky waters I dive, starving from the fear and the myth to survive," made me think about the, you know, don't eat before you go swimming. But the idea that, like, you're so hungry that, you know, you can drown because you're weak and you have low blood sugar and, like, you're trying to survive and as a result, you're not. And there's kind of like that overcompensating kind of thing throughout. It also made me think about that at the end when it's the go blind from the lives that others might make. So that brings up the TV one of, you know, if you sit too close, then you'll go blind. But it's not just going blind from watching TV. It's going blind from getting lost in what other people say life should be. And you know, fall into that trap of like, well, I'm supposed to have a 9-to-5 job and be married and have a family and, like, do all these things. And, like, you know, you go blind to your own kind of dreams and ambitions because you're taking the lives that other people make for you. I don't know. I found this really interesting. It has a bunch of different things that it references, but it all flows in a way that makes sense together. I also really liked the sound of "roll my bones and I am broke, spit my words before I choke." Having to say things before you know, choke on your own anger or, like, just needing to be able to express it. It's really interesting the way that it's put together.
I liked your observation about the other wives' tales that are kind of woven into this. I also really liked your comment about, like, you're supposed to have a 9-to-5 job, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. And my brain immediately went to, like, domesticated werewolf. Like, the werewolf putting on the nice suit and heading to work. not on the non-full moon, but during. It was kind of an interesting, you know, thing to, like, to domesticate a werewolf. Was an interesting image that I got in my head. And yet I still feel like it kind of applies here, you know, no heat from life, you know, just to really be sucked out, you know, the things that you were passionate about. And then in that perspective, it almost makes it like society telling that you don't exist. Like, but I do. No, you don't. Okay. So I really liked your comments. I think it gave me a new and interesting spin on it that I didn't get before. So thanks for the comments. And thanks again for the wonderful write, Stan. Always appreciated. What are we up to now, Faziana?
We have one by Nick Wald, if you can give that a read.
Absolutely. This is Changing Winds by Nick Wald. Wipe that look from your face, my dear. It's rotten and terribly strange. You'll be stuck like that forever, you know, if the wind should chance to change. Just look at your Grandpa Jeffrey, love, and that weird set to his mouth. He was grimacing at your granny one day when the west wind veered to the south. Your Auntie Deidre, Uncle Joe, and poor old Cousin Ken were having a face-pulling contest one day. Can you guess what happened then? And then there's William's wonky eye and Ed with the big floppy ears. They never paid heed to the weather report, and it all ended up in tears. Well, most of your father's folks, in fact, fell foul of a shift in the breeze. So please put a smile on your face, my love, and come give your mum a squeeze. End poem. Oh, this was fun. I really enjoyed it. Basically, your entire dad's side of the family is hideous. Your whole family is butt ugly because of weather and making weird faces, which, you know, of course is a riff on that old wives' tale, like if you make a silly face, it might get stuck that way, which, of course, it doesn't work like this. But I love the idea that it does and that it's happened to just about everyone on the dad's side of the family. Of course, the dad's side of the family, because it's mom telling the story, and I'm sure everyone on her side is just beautiful and perfect. So I really enjoyed it. You know, just look at your Grandpa Jeffrey, that weird set to his mouth. Like, I liked imagining what these people looked like in my head as I read the piece, which has a wonderful rhyme and flow, and it just kind of bounces along. But, you know, like, what does Grandpa Jeffrey's mouth look like? You know, I imagine it's like, really off kilter, you know, and a face-pulling contest one day. Like, how hideous are your relatives? So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, and it was like, if you don't want to be ugly like the rest of your family, put a smile on your face. Although I will say, like, as a woman, those last two lines were like, so put a smile on your face. It was like, that is the one thing you could say to me to make me frown, or tell you to stuff it, because no. But it's really cute here, and it makes a great kind of nursery rhyme that embellishes on the idea of making silly faces of them getting stuck. So this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the happy vibe to it, and just the wry joke in there that basically everyone on your dad's side is ugly, and that's because they all played with their face. And then the winds changed, and it got stuck. Could you imagine if facial features were determined by random weather patterns? Anyway, I really enjoyed the write, so thank you, Nick Wald. Good fun. Good fun piece. Your thoughts, Faziana?
I agree. It was really fun, and I had a lot of fun trying to picture what they look like, too. You know, William's wonky eye, and yes, the grandpa's grimacing face, because of how he looked at Granny one day. The idea that the wind makes a difference is cool. I've never heard of that. Like, it quotes at the end, if the wind changes, you'll be stuck like that. Like, I've heard of your face might get stuck like that when something happens, but I never knew about the wind thing, and I like it. I'm just picturing the kids having, like, the face-pulling contest, and then imagine why everyone looks like that. It's One thing that always made me laugh about the whole, like, you'll be stuck like that forever, was kids tend to make funny faces, like, when they're getting their picture taken. And then they are actually kind of stuck like that forever, because in all of the, like, the memories of when they were young, that's what they see. And then it's what sticks. My nephew was looking at old pictures of himself, and a lot of times when he was a baby, they had him in little hoodies and stuff that had bear ears. And he, like, straight face said to me, "How come you didn't tell me I used to be a bear?" Like, he just, like, flat out believed that he used to be a bear because he has, like, little bear ears in all the pictures when he's a baby. So it just makes me think about that. Like, maybe you'd look at these pictures of you making silly faces and be like, wow, I was a monster. But yeah, this is just, it's silly fun, and it pokes fun at the dad's family. I think this is really cute.
Agreed. I also thought it was really cute. Is it weird that I pictured, like, the British royal family? That's kind of where my mind went.
Now I am.
These names are really their names other than, like, William, but, like, and Ed, I suppose, but that's exactly who I was picturing. Anyway, great write, a lot of fun, enjoyed it very much. It was a great take on the wife's tale. So there again, Nick. Where are we off to, Faziana?
I'm going to play the audio from Heartthrob.
Facts are facts, by Heartthrob the poet. I truly hope you like it. You're either one or the other. Sinner becomes saint. A saint becomes sinner, lowers the stakes. A sinister appetite picks a side, thus feeling the heat on that frivolous ride. At beaver's pitch, watch a cold die. What statement is true where the two collide? Sitting close to TV might hurt your eyes, yet you won't go blind, that's truly a lie. Never wake a sleepwalker, don't know about that, but feed a cold starving fever, that experience is whack. Truly hope you like that. Once again, it's Heartthrob the Poet, signing off. God bless.
Thank you, Heartthrob, for the SoundCloud. Always good to hear a piece read in somebody's voice. I mean, you can write in a voice, too, but that's not what I was trying to say. Because it's always nice to hear exactly how it was meant to be written. So, and the cadence of this piece was really interesting to me. It almost... gosh, every time I try to think of a name lately, it just flies right out of my head. But there's a comedian. The way he read this really reminded me of Mitch Hedberg. That's who it was. The way he read it reminded me very much of the cadence of Nick Hedberg's voice. Mitch Hedberg. So I enjoyed hearing it in your voice. SoundCloud's always awesome. And then going through and reading the piece, I like that there's a riff kind of on the name of our show. You know, you're either one or the other. Sinner becomes saint. A saint becomes sinner, lowers the stakes. You know, it's a lot harder, I think, probably for a sinner to become a saint than a saint to become a sinner. But I guess that's where the beauty of it is. I mean, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that take. I feel like there's a mix of both in everyone. You know, to imply that a sinner has never done anything good or that a saint has never committed a sin, I think is inaccurate. But I love the twist on the words. You know, I think it's really more of a play than like an actual criticism. I'm not trying to take that too seriously. I'm just giving you the inner workings of my mind. A sinister appetite picks a side, you know, pick good or evil, you know, commit, basically, is what it's saying. Like, you know, choose one. And then, you know, at fever's pitch, watch a cold die. What a statement is true where the two collide. You know, and that's getting at the wives' tale. So was the appetite that picks a side, was leading from one into the wives' tale of feeding a cold or starving a fever. You know, which are you going to do? You have to commit to one or the other. You know, if it's a cold, feed it. If it's a fever, starve it. You have to pick one. You can't do both. You know, but which one do you do? And then sitting close to the TV might hurt your eyes, yet you won't go blind. That's just a lie. So in that one, it's just pointing out that not all wives' tales have any truth to them at all. And to pick that one is silly. And then it goes to the next wives' tale as well. Never wake a sleepwalker. Don't know about that. But feed a cold, starve a fever. That experience is whack. You know, they say not to wake a sleepwalker because they're asleep. Like, they're not going to remember what they were doing. They're not going to know where they are. They're going to be really discombobulated. They might literally collapse. You know, just not a good idea. You know, but it's for feeding a cold and starving a fever. You know, it's only partly true. You know, you do want to feed someone who has a cold. But I don't know, I enjoyed the piece. It really felt like a beat in the narrator's voice. So I appreciated that. So thank you, Heartthrob. I'm fascinated, too, by the image that was posted with this. Don't know what the image is, but I find it very fascinating, and I feel like it adds well to the rhythm of your voice to this piece. So thank you, Heartthrob, for the write. But these are your thoughts.
Something about that image makes me think about the ones where, like, they're on a tall building, and it's like they're just, like, sitting there having, like, their lunch, the businessman, while it was being built. So there's, like, you're on the edge. I can't think of what that was. It was, like, this famous picture of a bunch of guys
Empire
on some
State Building.
Yes. It reminds me of that, even though you can't see that he's super high up. But he just has that kind of old-school suit, and he's contemplating things. I think it's cool that he played on the part sinner, part saint thing. I liked a sinister appetite. And that idea of having to pick a side, either the cold or the fever being contradictions, he kind of makes it like cold, as in the temperature cold, compared to the heat of the fever. But when we're talking about cold, as in the sickness, and the fever is more like the flu kind of thing. But they're so similar that there's that twist of not really knowing what side you're on. And I like that he also plays with the TV one. So again, someone's pulled in multiple prompts. And recognizing that, you know, there's not truth in everything, but there's, like, grains of truth. You know, it's not great for your eyes to be close to the TV. It's not going to immediately make you blind. But, I mean, looking at things very closely in general, not just TV, makes it more likely that you're going to be nearsighted. Basically I was told, because I read so much, My faraway vision is screwed up. It, you know, because your eyes need time to adjust. You're supposed to look up every once in a while, and I'm not good at that. there's those little grains of truth in a lot of the wives' tales. It doesn't mean that they're true, but there's, like, little bits of truth. I like that he plays on that. I love that there was the SoundCloud, because that's not the rhythm that I think I would have read it in, and I like it. I like hearing the way that it's supposed to be.
I like what you were saying about how there's a grain of truth in everything, because I do think that most wives' tales come from some kind of seed of truth. Like, there was something to them that was true. Like, there's a reason people say that. It doesn't usually come out of absolutely nowhere. So, you know, I think that's very true. But sometimes it feels like, you know, a few grains of sand on an entire beach. I do think there is an initial purpose to Wives' Tale, so I think that it's good that it kind of gives a nod to that. So thanks again, Heartthrob, and really appreciate the SoundCloud. And wonderful comments of Asiana. Where are we off to now?
Now I'm going to read one by Pam Ray. Our lovely Pam. Okay. A Sonnet on Being Cautioned About Camping While on the Reg by Pam Ray. The springtime of girlhood is coming night to bitter... A sonnet on being cautioned about camping while on the reg. The springtime of girlhood is coming nigh to bitter end. To its privileges bid adieu in silent flows of tears. For womanhood will bring terror from which you can't defend. Flowing secrets tempt the appetites of both men and bears. Do not ponder within yourself questions you should not tend. A lady accepts with grace both wisdom and advice. Just hide yourself for 7 days and soon you'll start to mend. To field while Maya cycles will bring death or worse a price. Use a gentle soap with water to cleanse the stench and stain. Do not fret, you'll have near 20 days to do as you desire. Go about your given tasks, a lady does not complain, nor have her menstruation near heat of open fire. Learning passed through each generation, take it and believe. Copper coins must pay the toll of the bite of Mother Eve. End poem. Babbler, are you there? No, you've dropped. All right, call in again, Babbler. Oh, she's been affected by the phone problem. I know she's not in Canada, but in Canada, a huge amount of people today lost the ability to make calls. It's been a big thing. We have no debit pretty much everywhere. So she's getting the phone issues, and hopefully she'll be joining us again. So I'll start with my comment. I think this is really well done, Pam. And I like the way you said the line, will bring terror from which you can't defend. Flowing secrets tempt the appetites of both men and bears. So the idea that there's terror to be what men or bears desire, and that idea that your womanhood will bring that on. I don't know if it's true about bears, but it's definitely certain animals are drawn to the smell of blood, so it can potentially be a thing, and I can see how that would become a wives' tale if you were, you know, menstruating and had that smell about you. The pressure to hide yourself for 7 days is something that used to be true, and that I think it still is in some cultures, not so much in the Western world. And I see Babbler coming back. Woohoo!
Hello.
Welcome back. I'm glad you're back. It's such a crazy day where so, like, millions of people don't have phone in Canada today, and we have no debit. So I was just thinking, like, oh, no, your place has been taken over by whatever the heck is going on with us. But you're back.
Yay. Yeah. It was all of a sudden my phone it lost call, and then when I went to call back, it was like, you're not registered on a network. You only have emergency calls. I'm like, excuse me? Anyway, I restarted my phone to fix it. Go ahead and continue your thoughts. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. I feel like Pam definitely has some sarcasm here, because she is not a lady who would sit quietly when told what to do, is my impression. So go about your given tasks. A lady does not complain. I'm pretty sure she would say that with some sarcasm there, like some sassiness. I'm picturing Pam being sassy in her read of that. And I've never heard about not putting menstruation near a fire, nor have her menstruation near heat of open fire. I mean, maybe if you're wearing some kind of old school pad, that was very flammable. I don't know, certain materials may melt. very interesting. This is really a different take. It was not a wives' tale that I was expecting, and Pam, being the brilliant Pam, can turn anything into a wonderful poem. What did you think, Babbler?
Well, I didn't hear all of your comments, so I apologize if I repeat something, but I did read it, and I mean, yeah, I think it's dripping in some sarcasm, but it's all, I love the dark comedy of it, you know. The flowing secrets tempt the appetites of both men and bears, you know. Men being, you know, the sexualization of girls pretty much the second they start menstruating, if not before, which is kind of gross, but also a reality. But then, like, bears, because they say that they're, like, attracted to the scent of blood. You know, so out camping and being like, oh, no, the bears. Which, you know, of course, is mentioned in the title of the piece, you know, cautioned about camping while on the rag. Be careful of the bears. You know, and yet it's also kind of a nod to growing up, you know, as a girl. To begin having your period. It's funny because sometimes it gets painted like this thing you're supposed to look forward to. And then other times it gets painted as like, well, you're not a kid anymore. And so it leads to like this really weird mix of feelings, you know, this different, you know, your body is going through a change, but also the way people treat you goes through a change. And I think it gives that a nod as well, you know, this is weirdly personal, but, you know, I started menstruating when I was really young, like I was 8. And then, so that was pretty normal for me. And then when I got to like middle school, high school, and all my friends were all talking about it, like, oh my God, I got my period. And then they'd want to know like, well, when are you going to get yours? And I'm like, I've had it for years. There was this weird, like they'd get offended that like, I didn't tell them, but like it'd been so long. It wasn't like worthy of a conversation. But there is this kind of growing up to it. And yet it does go from like, oh, you're a kid that can be fun and be carefree. And now there's like this period thing that you have to worry about, which is going to change the way people treat you, but also change the way that you're expected to behave, you know? Now you need to be worried about all of these kind of childish things, you know, like the bears are for the children and the open fire is kind of like that nod to being a child. But then like the men is not a childish concern. You know, that's an adult concern. You know, the lady does not complain. Like you're now expected to just be grown up all of a sudden and not bitch about it. Like nobody wants to hear. You know, learning passed through each generation, take it and believe copper coins must pay the toll of the mother, bite of Mother Eve. You know, you menstruate because, you know, Eve bit an apple. So now we have to deal with all this bullshit, which, of course, I mean, isn't true. But at the same time, like you are dealing with like the fallout of the generations before you with the expectations of how you're supposed to behave. I did remember in college learning about this tribe in Papua New Guinea where menstruating women aren't allowed to like cook or clean or anything else, and they have to go stay out of the village in this like women's menstruation shack, right? And originally the shacks were pretty crappy, but lately they're not so crappy. Like it's almost like a spa vacation, and I'm like, the men would be like, oh, it's terrible. They can't do anything. They are not allowed to touch anything because they're, like, spiritually unclean or whatever. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, yeah, no, it sounds like they got you whipped. Like, they don't have to cook. They don't have to clean. They get to leave town, go out to the spa. Like, I found it kind of comical. But I really enjoyed this ride. Like, the way that it interweaves that childhood innocence and the silly kind of fears, and yet the new expectations and the bitterness of that that comes with growing up. So that was a great piece, beautifully punctuated with wry humor, a wonderful sonnet. So thanks, Pam. Always enjoy your writes.
It kind of makes me want to reread The Red Tent because it's been forever and now I can't really remember. But it's a book about, like, you know, the bonds that women have, and it's like a spin-off of the Bible. Like, there are some biblical characters in it, but it's the women who don't have a very big role in the Bible, and it's, like, the things that happen in the red tent, and the red tent is where you go when you have your period. And like you just said, it's kind of like they're supposed to be, like, outcasts because they're dirty, but actually it's, like, their favorite time because it's when they get to actually, like, be together in privacy and talk. Oh, I want to reread it now because I don't remember any of the details, but I'm like, that was totally The Red Tent. Anyway, sidetracked in my mind. now we have a poem by Peter Solway. And, Babbler, I think it's your turn to read.
Yeah. It would be because I dropped. this is Never Wake a Sleepwalker by Peter Solway. Sage advice in unconscious state. Mother's bedroom to enter, wardrobe open, inquire of the camera hidden somewhere. Informed mother, don't wake a sleepwalker, especially son in loose pajamas, pulled back to bed. If woken, a sleepwalking teen could strangle a parent, plead insane, or heart could stop from shock. Grandkids not forthcoming, only possible angels in heaven, fast-thinking mom telling errant son, go back to bed in other room. Oh, Oedipal possibilities, womb reject, Freudian perversities of regression's wish, obedient as Hercules, secretaries of Adolf, my search called off. Back to bed, Lena with a camera. Proud natives of Africa, getting older and weirder, growing my boyhood hair, hunting for men, still not woken. And so a really interesting piece. You know, to me, it's about, you know, a teenage boy, you know, a boy growing into an adult without really being awake, you know, not fully realizing, you know, what's going on. And there's something dark and sinister about it, you know, sleepwalking into the mother's bedroom where there's a camera filming from the wardrobe, you know, and that he's wearing, like, loose pajamas. Like, there's something very sinisterly sexual about it. You know, but then it's like, don't wake him up because if you wake him up, he could kill you and plead insane. Like, or maybe he'd die and then you'll never get grandkids because, you know, he's dead. But it's almost like a threat. You know, if you wake me up, if you make me realize what's happening, I'll either die or kill you. You know, it's almost like being shut down or dissociated to protect yourself from what's going on. You know, fast thinking mom telling Aaron's son, go back to bed in the other room, you know, meaning like a brother who's like coming to check out what's going on. Like, this is kind of a scary poem, really, especially with like Oedipal possibilities, you know, Oedipus being, of course, the mother-son relationship, you know, womb reject, Freudian perversities. It's kind of a freaky poem, you know, obedient as Hercules, secretaries of Adolf, you know, obviously the Nazis, you know, whose argument was like, I just did what I was told, which, you know, was deemed in a court that that's not an acceptable reason to murder people, you know, just because you're told to. You know, back to bed with the camera, proud natives of Africa getting older and weirder, growing my boyhood hair, you know, talking about like pubic hair that's just coming in, hunting for men, still not woken, you know, just still not really aware of what's going on. This is a pretty creepy poem. It's very well written, but it does give me the heebie-jeebies in a very effective way. So creepy, right, Peter, but I liked it. Your thoughts, Aziziana?
I agree with the creep factor. It definitely has, like, a sexual abuse kind of vibe. I mean, with the Oedipus part and the Freudian part, like, I kind of wondered if it was, like, don't wake someone sleepwalking when they're having a wet dream kind of thing. It's like they may misunderstand the situation or be kind of caught up in the moment of their dream and something bad happens. I don't know. There was definitely an ick factor in the incestuous kind of way. The camera in particular made it feel like it was the mother doing it, whereas like with the Oedipal and Freudian things, that's more like the boy's perspective wanting things. But the something about the camera and the thing makes me feel like it's the mother who's instigating. It definitely has some creepiness to it. But again, very clever in its wording and with its references. The hunting for men still not woken kind of makes me think about like the term woke, like being aware of, you know, so like oppression and society's issues and like all the negativity and prejudice and all that. So looking for people who are not woke to what's going on in the world, and waking up someone who's been kind of led to believe whatever it is in their sleepwalking, it ends up being a fight with the whole like secretaries of Adolf. Like you said, it's like the Nazis who just kind of went along with it, and then to realize what you went along with and waking up from that and seeing, you know, the horrors for what it is, I kind of feel like that's connected to this whole thing, that it's about, like, we're not awake to what's actually going on, and then if you're woken up and you see the creepiness that has gone on, then it's a shock.
I like that. I like taking it out of the more immediate context, you know, which is almost like a molestation kind of scenario, and putting it into a larger scale perspective. It makes it almost like a more political perspective, you know, like we're all sleeping, we're the sleeping sons of our mother, which is like our country, which is like filming us and watching us, and kind of manipulating us while we're not aware of what's really happening. You know, and then the brother kind of coming in who's told to go back to bed is like, other countries or other nations are being like, hey, wake up, you know, what's going on over there, you know, and it's like, shut up.
Yeah.
So I like that perspective. I think that was a really good take to kind of go from like the micro zoomed in literal translation to really take it out a step. And I think that's an excellent observation, Aziziana. So.
Well, Peter often writes very politically, so it's just kind of where my mind jumps when we're reading one of his poems. I think I'm looking for it.
I was just distracted by ew.
That's fair.
Gross.
I think that's a healthy
reaction.
What's
happening? But I think your interpretation is not only like likely, but I think it's probably spot on. So, great comment, great observation, and thank you for taking it a step away from the ick factor. Thanks again, Peter Solway, for the write. Always appreciated. Always interesting. What are we up to now, Faziana?
Now we have one by Paul Thomas One, and it's called Grandma Sellers Smith, 1892 to 1972. Red sky at night, shepherds, sailors' delight. Red sky in the morning, shepherds or sailors' warning. A stitch in time, savors nine, the sharper the blast, the sooner 'tis past. Lightning. Don't cross your eyes, they will stay that way. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Spilling salt, bad luck. Break a mirror, 7 years, better duck. Newspapers great for cleaning glass. One gray hair, pull two, will amass. Sad we only had 3 minutes. End poem.
I really enjoyed this write. You know, just all the things that Grandma used to say. You know, it is a memory of a person and all the, you know, the different little tidbits that you remember hearing growing up. And, you know, the red sky at night, I always heard it as sailor's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. Probably because I lived on the coast. You know, if you live in the middle of somewhere, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. A shepherd probably makes more sense. I don't really quite understand the wisdom of that, but I do feel like there's probably, again, some truth to it. You know, and it having to do with storms. Although these days it's just as likely to have to do with, like, pollution. You know? But, you know, and I think I've heard almost all of these. You know, a stitch in time saves nine. You know, the sharper the blast, the sooner it is past. I've not heard that one, but it would, you know, I'm not sure how accurate that is. But it's an interesting one. It's a new one for me. You know, and then, of course, don't cross your eyes, they'll stay that way, which that's not how that works. And an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Not true, but eating healthy is helpful. Again, that's like one of those grain of truth ones. Like, don't take the literal translation. Eating one apple every single day does not mean you do not ever need to go to the doctor. but eating a diet that has a lot of fruits and vegetables in it will help you stay healthy longer. You know, and of course I've heard of spilling salt being bad luck and breaking a mirror being 7 years of bad luck. And newspapers, by the way, are really good for cleaning glass. I've used that a few times. One gray hair pulled two will amass. The opposite is actually true on that, by the way. If you know the hormones for gray hair, that if you leave a gray hair more of the chemical reaction that makes your hair turns gray is likely to spread. However, gray hairs are also less likely to grow back. So if you pluck all your gray hairs, you may end up with thinner hair than you expected as you age. And sad we only had 3 minutes, I think, is a nod to the rules for the contest, where I, of course, ask people to limit a poem to about 3 minutes just because you don't want to hog up all the time with reading, not to mention, I don't know if our listeners have noticed, but I kind of leave longer comments. You know, I like to kind of dig in on a lot of these pieces, and to give me, you know, a 10-minute long poem to read is one, what the heck? You're hogging the show, bro. And two, how can I possibly comment on all of that in any depth? So, but this was short and sweet. I would love to hear a little more about your grandma's old wives' tales, because I love hearing new ones, but also appreciate your adherence and attention to the rules. So I enjoyed it. It was fun. I liked that there was a couple that I'd never heard tucked away in there. So great write, Paul Thomas. Appreciate it. Aviviana, your thoughts?
I like that it had that kind of nostalgic feel of all the things that Grandma would say. and that even that it showed her lifetime. And I'm relieved to hear that the 3 minutes was a reference to your rules, because for a second I thought it may have been how long they had together, because, you know, I don't know how old Paul is. It could have been that, like, you know, he died the year that she, I mean, sorry, he was born the day that she died, or the year that she died, and they only had a short time together. That was where my mind went. Maybe because my great aunt died at the same time as my brother was born, like minutes apart, and my grandpa was always convinced that her spirit went in him, and that was like a reincarnation thing. But so when I heard 3 minutes, I was like, oh, well, they only had a few minutes together. But your 3 minutes makes so much more sense. So I'm glad that he actually got time with his grandma, if I'm wrong there. And I like what you said about the Shepherd's Sailor's Delight, because I've always heard it as Sailor too. But it makes sense that you would talk about shepherds if you were in, like, a prairie where there was no sailors. I didn't know that a stitch in time saves nine, but I really love that because it's like that idea that, like, if you take time to do it right the first time, then you don't spend so much time, like, fixing all of the mistakes. I don't even know if that's what it means, but that's how I interpret it. And then the apple a day, yes, you know, not getting scurvy is good. For some reason now, because I'm overtired, I'm picturing someone, like, throwing an apple at the doctor. Keeping him away. Physically keeping him away.
That could work.
The newspaper's cleaning glass, I would think that would make a big mess, because newspapers has that, like, ink that gets all over you.
You know, I haven't ever noticed that when I'm cleaning a mirror, though. And it doesn't really come off. Maybe it all just gets stuck in the Windex.
all right. Fascinating. yeah, no, this was nice. It was a good mix of the old wives' tales.
Yeah.
Okay, now,
I just thought it was fun. It's possible that he only got 3 minutes with his grandma. I just took it as probably a nod to the rule.
No, yours definitely makes more sense. why don't we do your poem?
Alrighty. Let me get to it real quick. This is Save My Mother. I stepped on a crack and cracked my knuckles, hoping pinches of salt might save my mom's back, counting out how many carrots will counteract the too close to the television cataracts, hoping it's not a bad thing that'll bring two more with it, like chopsticks pointed upright or an apple eaten late at night, mingling with all the bubblegum in the bottom of my bulging tongue, buck-tooth and cross-eyed from looking at my nose and sucking my thumb. I'm not sure how much of this is wise and how much is dumb, but I'm knocking on wood, hoping good things will save my mom. End poem.
Oh, I think this is so fun. I love the way you combined a bunch of them, but also, like, did the counteracting to them, the trying to balance it out, the carrots and the cataracts. I mean, it's true. The things of, like, the carrots give you perfect vision and the TV makes you blind. So the idea of, like, trying to balance it out, the bubblegum in the belly, I like the buck tooth and cross-eyed, the sucking your thumb does influence your teeth. I just love the back and forth here of, how much of this is wise and how much is dumb and, like, you know, what do you believe? And knock on wood, like, just in case kind of thing. And the save your mom, because that's how it started, with the stepping on a crack, break your mother's back. I think that's a really good first line, closing line, because it brings it back to the beginning. And I do remember being super anal about that as a kid. Like, I was not superstitious in general, but the stepping on a crack thing, I was, like, super intense about, and I actually still am to a certain degree. Like, I don't consciously do it, but then I'll realize that, like, I'm, like, taking, like, a weird path, and it's because, like, the way that the stone is or something, I catch myself doing it without meaning to. I avoid the cracks. And people will point out, they're like, wow, you're, like, really jumping around there, because it's, like, you know, if there's, like, a weird shape pattern, and I don't even know I'm doing it. I just do, and it's not like I actually believe something's wrong with it, but I think it was just, like, drilled into me in, like, a joking way, but I have such terrible anxiety that at whatever point someone told me it will break your mother's back, I took it seriously at that time, and now it's just, like, ingrained in me, you avoid the cracks. I you did this really well. It has, like, this fun rhythm to it that makes it just extra light. Like, it kind of, like, teases yourself for any of these things that you might worry about. I really like that.
Thanks. Yeah, I have fun writing it. I mean, I just kind of, I don't know, whipped it out, because I was just thinking about all the different things that counteract things. I didn't even get to include all of the ones that I was thinking about. You know, like with the apple eaten late at night, that's not so much a Western thing, but especially in Asia, you know, they say that you shouldn't eat apples late at night. They say night apple is poison apple. Because they think it'll make you sick because it disrupts your digestive system while you're sleeping, which is, like, the exact opposite of, like, the Western kind of, you know, an apple a day
gets
your way, unless you eat it at night.
No, and I was always given it at night, too. We had, like, a late-night snack of an apple or an orange.
Like, all the different ones that are, like, the exact opposite of each other. I'm like, how many carrots do you have to eat to make it okay to sit close to the TV? Like, you know, if putting salt over your shoulder is supposed to give you good luck, like, how much salt can you dump? Like, how many things over the shoulder? Like, well, how do I even this out here? Anyway, it was just kind of a fun I was just thinking about all of the opposing wives' tales that are at odds with each other. So it was fun to do.
I love it.
Thanks. So we've got 8 minutes left. What are we
up to? I've been debating how much of, like, can we fit in the next contest? Like, we can definitely do one or two, and then the rest will carry over. Yeah, we might as well. I was
okay.
Like, do I want to start a new thing? But, yes, we still have 8 minutes. Okay, so on to your next contest. Tell us about your prompt.
So the next contest is Oh, that sounds horrible. And stopped. Are you still there, Mariana?
You're back. Yeah, you're back now. You were breaking up for a second, but you're back.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was you or me. I just heard horrible static coming out of my phone. So the next contest is titled Spirit Animal. So for this contest, I was thinking about spirit animals. And have you ever looked at an animal and just felt like it embodied your personality exceptionally well? Or a mood, I want to hear about it. Tell me, are you slippery like an eel, keen like a fox, bumbling like a panda? Maybe an animal shows off the best parts of you, or maybe they give a strong nod to the darkest parts. There aren't really any prompts that I could give that would help anybody, because, you know, you either have an affinity for an animal or maybe you don't. But I did pick some kind of silly animal photos to help inspire a kinship. Which people are welcome to use or riff off of, or not at all. So that was the contest. Yeah. So if we want to get into it, that is the prompt. Tell me about an animal that embodies something about you.
So I'm going to start with Blue Leader 1, and this is a brevity called Sapiens. An open barrel of sake, drunken monkey sitting on a log vomits truth. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. There's a lot of things that I actually really like about this brevity. You know, it's a haiku. But what I like about it is, first of all, it's titled Sapiens, which is like wise or thinking. But of course, we think of like Homo sapiens, which is people. But it's related also to the drunken monkey, of course. So I thought that was a clever tie-in. And I always kind of appreciate when the word of a title doesn't appear in the piece and kind of adds to the piece instead of pulls from it. But then also I just like the truth of it. You know, an open barrel of sake, drunken monkey sitting on a log vomits truth. You know, alcohol really can ease the tongue a bit, loosen the lips, if you will, and make you say things that you wouldn't say otherwise. A lot of times more truthful, more honest, or more vulnerable things. Not always. There's different kinds of drunks out there. But a lot of times I think it eases the truth out. You know, in this case, vomits, I thought was an interesting word choice. But, you know, to relate to a monkey. Also, just with the mention of sake, you know, I, of course, think Japan. And then I think when I read drunken monkey kind of tied with sake, I picture, like, those white monkeys that sit in the hot springs and get drunk off fermented fruit is instantly where my mind goes. I always kind of wanted to check those guys out. Anyway, wonderful haiku, wonderful brevity, Blue Leader 1. I really enjoyed it. Your thoughts, Faziana?
I also thought about those monkeys, and I couldn't remember exactly where it was, but I had recently watched some documentary on Netflix that included that, the monkeys who were getting drunk off the fruit, and that's where I went when I read Drunken Monkey. But then sitting on a log, as the children's librarian I am, I automatically went to the little rhyme about the five green and speckled frogs sitting on the log, and then I tried to make it into, like, a drunken monkey version of it, and I kind of, like, got off in my own mind trying to do that. the last line is definitely my favorite, the vomit's truth. Because, like you said, when you are drunk, you tend to be more honest and open about things because you're not so worried about it. You're very direct. I like when people are direct. I don't necessarily like when they're drunk, but I like when people are open and truthful and, you know, say how it is. And so vomit's truth, I connected with that. That was a good line.
Yeah, I liked it too. And again, there are different kinds of drunks. You know, there's the laughy, happy drunks. There's the violent, angry drunks. There's the weirdly sexual drunks. But my favorite are the more vulnerable, truth-telling, fireside, long-talk drunks.
Nice.
I enjoyed the haiku. Thank you, Blue Leader 1. Much appreciated.
Agreed. We are out of time now. Blog Talk is telling me you have 1 minute, 90 seconds. Thank you to everyone who wrote for Babbler's Contests and who gave us permission to read them. Thank you, Babbler, for the wonderful inspiration. Thank you, Fill My Eyes, for giving us this time on the air. And everybody check out my contest. I have one right now for Disability Month. It is Disability Pride Month or Disability Awareness Month, at least in Canada. I think it might be a global one. And as a disabled person myself, this is kind of a topic that touches me. But also I put some quotes out there that you can write to, no matter what connection to disability is, as long as you're respectful about it, of course. And please check that out. Write us a poem, and we will see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone. Have an excellent night.